Hello, I'm Bob Stonebreaker, an alcoholic, and I'm a member of the Fourth Dimension Group of Santa Monica, California. And I'm sitting here on a Saturday afternoon, where I've took a decision to make a tape and to talk a bit about what page is that on? What a pertinent question for me. In my earliest of sobriety, with my sponsor, I was taught to ask that question. Oh, I had all these emotional storms and all the things we new people have. And I would say, oh, Carl, my sponsor Carl, oh, Carl, this and that, and ain't it awful? And I'd just carry on something awful on first. And he'd allow about it. Oh, anywhere from 50 to 70 seconds of that. And he'd listen. He'd say, okay, Bob, that's enough. Now, you have your book with you, Bob. Yeah, I have the book right here by the phone. Yeah, okay, open it up to page. Now read it. Read the page I told you. I'd read it back to you. I'd say, okay, Carl, it says, he said, what's it say there? Read that paragraph three. I read paragraph three. Exactly, that's it. Now, Bob, do you understand what that says? Carl, I understand it. Yeah, I said, okay. He says, okay, now you know what to do, right? Oh, yeah, I guess I know what. He said, okay, is there anything else, Bob? No, Carl, nothing else. Okay, Bob, I love you. Bye. And that's the way I found that the answers for me, at least, are in the big book. And here I am in my 12th year of sobriety, and still, I'm finding the answers each and every time, right where they promised. Right like my sponsor showed me from the beginning. Somewhere in the first 103 pages of the Big Book. For in that first 103 pages, I find out what is the problem. In depth. At least enough depth for me. And then it explains what is the Alcoholics Anonymous solution. The problem and begin living in the solution. By following a planned program of action. And it prescribes how to do that. And if that isn't enough, once I'm in the solution, I'm living in the solution, how do I stay there in what's called the maintenance steps or the maintenance procedures? Well, there's the answers, the problem, the solution, how to get from the problem and start living in the solution, and then how to stay there. Well, what more do I need? Well, I needed nothing more than that. I needed nothing more. Like many people at the forefront of this wonderful experience, I wondered, what's the use of it all? I wonder if it works. After all, they said somewhere in the back of the book that they know only a little. Maybe they don't know very much. Well, I found out that they knew enough to cause a personality change, which was sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. And guess what? That's all I wanted to know. They knew enough. If they knew only little, that little they knew was a plenty for me the way I was at, I'll guarantee you. So I was pretty excited when I found out about these four things, that they were in there. And I made it my business to find out where they are. So primarily, that's what this tape is going to be about, to explain to people who are newer, as my sponsor so many years explained to me, what page that is on. So I hope you have the question. If you have that question in your mind, and you have the big book in your hand, and hopefully maybe a yellow marker or a pen, we'll be ready to begin. somewhere, very early in sobriety, I heard a very disappointing thing from a member of the fellowship. And he told me that people don't recover from alcoholism. He said there's no such thing as a recovered alcoholic. He said that you just start recovering. You just get a little bit better every day. And every year a little better, a little better. But you never get recovered. He said, probably, Bob, you'll spend your whole life recovering from this thing. And I was so disappointed in that. But I believed it, and I hung on, and I did what they said. But lo and behold, I started reading this wonderful book after being prompted by Carl, and I became aware of all sorts of different ideas. All need I do was open my book, as I hope you are doing now, to the title page. And it gives a hint about whether that fellow was right or wrong right to begin with. It says, Alcoholics Anonymous, the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. Well, what's that mean? Recovered. It says recovered. I wonder if it says it anywhere else in the book. Maybe it's a mistake. Maybe they just said that and didn't mean it. So let's go look through the book and see if we can find it anywhere else. Now, here we go. Looking through here. Now, I don't see anything about it here. I'm looking at the preface here. No, nothing there. Let's start right here. It might not be in here. See, here we are. Uh-oh. Page 13, Roman numeral 13. Okay, you there? Now, look. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. What do you think about that? Well, maybe let's look, see if it's anywhere else. Page Roman numeral 15, second paragraph, there's the word recovered again. Oh, look this way. Roman numeral page 17 up at the top. What's it saying? It also indicated that strange work, one alcoholic with another was vital to permanent recovery. Permanent recovery. What do you think about that? Permanent recovery. Well, that's exactly what I was hoping for. Get punched in the nose. One can have permanent recovery from that. I vouch for that. Permanent recovery. If I learn to keep my mouth shut, I'll have permanent recovery from that punch in the nose. And that's what I'm looking for. I wonder if I can get that. Let's see. But I wonder how long it's going to take. How long does it take? If I'm going to get this wonderful thing, get recovered, how long is it going to take? Well, let's read the next paragraph. It says, hence the two men set to work almost frantically upon alcoholics arriving to ward of Akron City Hospital. Their very first case, a very desperate one, recovered immediately. Did you hear that? Did you read that? Immediately? You mean you get permanent recovery? And you get immediate recovery? Well, what do you think about that? Well, that guy was full of beans, wasn't he? Well, I'm glad to see that. I wonder if it says it anywhere. Yeah, let's look over here. Here, look here. Turn the page here. Page number 17. Here it says, pretty interesting. It says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous know thousands of men and women who are once just as hopeless as Bill. Nearly all have recovered. They've solved the drink problem. Oh, that's what they must mean. That means what recovered is when you solve the drink problem. I'll bet you that's what it is. I wonder, let's check someplace else here. Let's look back here. My gosh, look at page 57. 57 at the top. The last sentence of the first paragraph says this. It says, seemingly, he could not drink even if he would. God had restored his sanity. Aha! Now there's another definition. Another definition of what they mean by recovered. Sanity gets to be restored. And you couldn't drink even if you would. man, that is super metaphysical recovery to me. That's beyond recovery. That's like out in the fourth dimension somewhere. My goodness, couldn't drink if he would. I couldn't imagine that when I first got here. Just couldn't imagine anything could be. Gosh, almost like another dimension altogether. Well, that's pretty exciting, isn't it? Wow. I wonder what else they say about all this stuff. Let's see. Back here on page XX20, Roman numeral, way back there, let's see what it says here. It says, I wonder how many get recovered. Now, if they do get recovered, let's see what happens. How many do get recovered? It says of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober once and remained that way. That must be a permanent recovery. And then it says 25% sobered up after some relapses. And among the remainder who stayed on with AA showed improvement. Well, that's pretty good. It looks like a pretty high percentage of the folks who try this thing that's in the book get recovered. That's pretty good statistics there. I like that. But I wonder what they mean by that improvement. Well, it was pointed out to me to check that improvement. I don't know. Now, I got a choice. I can come to AA and I can get recovered, or I can hang around and just don't drink and go to meetings, and I can get improved. Now, this here guy got improved. I wonder who they're talking about. I'll bet they're talking about this guy here over here on page 32. I'll bet you that's what they mean by improvement. Let's see what happened to this guy here who improved. He said a man of 30 was doing a great deal of speed, man. Well, that's what he did. He says he's nervous and everything, having an awful time. I'm just going down kind of fast. It says that he quit drinking for a long time, and he quit drinking for 25 years. Well, boy, that's improvement. That sounds pretty good to me. Let's see what else it says. It says, he started drinking again, 25 years. He said he tried to regulate his drinking and everything like that. And then down to the bottom of the page, the top of the next page, it says, this is every attempt failed. The robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead in 4 years. Uh-oh. Well, that was really some great improvement, but it wasn't enough. Bill Wilson used to say, the good is the enemy of the best. And in this guy's story, who just improved, I can see that. Improvement is not good enough for the real alcoholic. I think what they're telling us here, that the real alcoholic has got to get what's called recovered, which is the best, rather than a good, which is just improvement. So I'm glad to see this. This got me pretty excited. Man, if I can get recovered and stay recovered, permanent recovery, even immediate recovery perhaps, how exciting that is. And I'm not going to have to go around day after week after month after year just recovering, getting a little bit better every day. I can get recovered at the beginning of this thing. If I find out what the problem is, if I find out what the solution is, and I find out how to get from the problem to the solution, and then I learn how to stay there, well, that was exactly what I wanted, and that's what I tried. Well, let's go back in front of the book and see what kind of a deal this is. Now, here on Roman numeral 11, it says, because this book has become the basic text. Now, I don't like textbooks too much. It really means a lot of work. But it says basic text. In other words, this isn't something I'm supposed to read. It's something I'm supposed to study. Somewhere early on, somebody told me you're supposed to read it first. And then you're supposed to study it, and then you're supposed to eat it, and then you're supposed to digest it, and then it becomes you, and you become it, and you become recovered. Well, that's pretty simple, but I thought I'd give it a try. So I started studying the book right at the first, as soon as I could. Might not have made too much sense out of it, but I started studying it. And I found some things on my own, but most things I know were pointed out to me from another member, and other members, especially from a lot of tapes I heard. But the basic text seems to me, well, if it's a textbook, it must have some kind of clear-cut things, because I heard around that there's just a lot of maybe nice spiritual truths in this book, and you can take a truth here and take a truth there, and kind of make up your own program, sort of smorgasbord-like, or take what you want and leave the rest, or you could maybe just get it through osmosis, sitting around AA meetings, listening to people talk. Well, maybe that would be it. But I wonder what it says here. Now, here it says on the very next page over Roman numeral 13, it says to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book.
Precisely. Well, if this is a textbook, isn't that good? It's going to say precisely how to do it. And then over here on page 20, just regular number page 20, let's see what it says here. It says that the purpose of this book is to answer such questions. What's it say? Specifically. And then on page 29, it says, further on, at the top of the page, you got it? Okay. It says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. That recovered again, too. But clear-cut. So we got so far, we got precisely, we got specifically, and we got clear-cut. And if that isn't enough, let's go to page 45. And 45, down toward the middle of the book, the second paragraph starts, it says, well, that's exactly what this book is about. So it's going to tell us specifically. It's going to tell us clear-cut directions. It's going to tell us exactly. And it tells us precisely. So, in other words, a textbook, that's exactly what a textbook does. It tells those things. It doesn't when you study a book on algebra, for instance. It's not going to say, well, we sort of think that maybe it's suggested that X might be sort of like a 3 or a 4 or something like that. No, it's not going to say it. It's going to tell you exactly, specifically. It's going to be clear-cut directions to teach you how to do it. In other words, this is a book to teach us how to do things. So we can take these words that it says in here and take them pretty seriously as though they really mean something specifically. And not only that, by the way this is laid out, they're going to connect with some other idea in the book. The wonderful friends we listen to a lot, Joe and Charlie, and their takes, they talk about how that algebra and how you couldn't learn to do algebra unless you learn how to add and subtract and multiply and divide. And only then can you do algebra. So if I don't find out the problem, I probably won't know much about the solution. If I don't know much about the solution, I can't do much about the plan, program of action. And I can't do the maintenance steps unless I know all that stuff. So maybe it would be good just to slowly overlook these exact, precise directions. Notice it didn't say anything about suggested yet. But it, afraid of my, but anyway, they're directions here. And let's see, just sort of an overview of what we're going to have to see here. I know I took a college class one time, and they said what we're going to learn. They told us the first part, and they showed us sort of an overview of the things we'd be taught, so we kind of get things in perspective. Well, we know we're going to learn four things here, and let's get the table of contents and look it over. First of all, we're going to learn a problem, and the problem is explained to us in the doctor's opinion and Bill's story. So you can mark that, if you like, in your book, in the table of contents. And then mark the solution. And there are three chapters that have to do with the solution to the problem. And that's chapter 2, there is a solution. Chapter 3, more about alcoholism. And chapter 4, we agnostics. And in that, we're going to find out the solution. Now, we want to find out the next two things, which are the plan program of action and the maintenance steps, or maintenance procedures, if you prefer. And those two things are in chapters 5, how it works, 6, into action, and 7, working with others. Following all that is a lot of other good writing and so on, and pertinent good information. But really, that is the end of the steps. That is from the beginning to the end. This is steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. And that brings us from the beginning of the book up to page 103. So let's look now at the problem. Let's see what is meant by the powerlessness described in the first step. Admittedly, we were powerless over alcohol, but our lives have become unmanageable. In all, the big book in dealing with the problem of powerlessness discusses primarily, in a very simple way, two types of powerlessness for real alcohol. There's a type of powerlessness that happens after the first drink. And then there's another type of powerlessness that is in process before the first trick. The first part of this thing, this, as you probably have heard already, that's physical allergy coupled with a mental obsession. And he talks about the physical allergy at the very first. Let's see what he says. Let's turn to Doctor's Opinion, Roman numeral 26, XXV1, I guess. It says that we believe, and it so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy. That the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in an average temperate drinker.
This is all we really need to know about what happens to us after the first drink.
Now he's going to say this again. At the top of page 27, Roman numeral, it says, after they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is little hope of his recovery. So, the phenomenon of craving, once they take a drink, the physical allergy clicks in, and we're gone. And here we go. He comes over here. Let's read page 28, Roman numeral. And he talks about four or five different kinds of alcoholics there on the second paragraph down. And then the next paragraph says this. It says, all these different types of drinkers and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. So there we have a common symptom of all real alcoholics, that is after the first drink. The average temperate drinker does not have that. So here we see about all we need to know about what is the powerlessness of the first step. We found out everything we need to know about the physical allergy of the first step. And all this takes place after we take the first drink. If we don't take the first drink, none of this makes very much difference. So you notice Dr. Silkworth doesn't go way into, oh, he's going to wail and holler about cirrhosis of the liver, about blackouts, about all the physical allergies we know, alcoholic sores, Jake Blake. That's just confusing. All we need to know, at least all the Alcoholics Anonymous people seem to know, and that's all I need to know about it, is that when I take a drink, I develop the phenomenon of craving. And that's all you need to know about the second kind of powerlessness. Our common problem, our common allergy is that. So, now that's one thing I find in this wonderful book. Everything is very, very simple. One could never brag about how much one knows about this book, because this book is a basic text, but it's written for people with fried brains like mine was. It's written for people who aren't too smart. So they keep it real simple. So don't worry if you talk about the book and somebody accuses you of bragging about it. This isn't exactly Einstein's theory. It's pretty simple stuff. The phenomenon of craving is what we mean by the physical allergy, and that happens after the first drink. So that's all we need to say about that. So we're halfway through the first step already here, it seems like. Let's see, what's the other part? Well, the other part was the mental obsession, which happens before the first drink, which we see Dr. Silkworth discussing on page 26, way down to the bottom, last paragraph of page 26, Roman numeral 26. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after time differentiate true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience that sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks they see others taking with impunity. So there's a beginning of to see the second part, the mental obsession part that we alcoholics have for some reason or other. Notice they don't bother telling why we have it. They don't go into the psychology of it, all that would be interesting perhaps, but it doesn't bring about recovery from alcoholism. We don't need to know all that. All we need to know is that we have an obsession of the mind. Somebody told me I had a drunken monkey in my head. Well, that's a good way to put it. I had a drunken monkey in my head, and today the drunken monkey's gone. In early sobriety, it was not, and I wanted to get rid of that drunken monkey because it wanted to drink. It wanted to get me, and it would not allow me to see the truth in the matter of drink. The obsession is a thought that is so powerful to cancel out all other thoughts. An obsession is almost like a screen that shuts out the truth in the matter of drink for the real alcoholic. It filters out the truth in the matter of drinking, and the truth just doesn't get through. It might get through every day for 35, 40, 50 days, or even for a year or two. The truth will filter through it all at once. It won't that time. It closes up, and the truth doesn't get through, and the alcoholic, the drunken monkey, takes charge again, and the alcoholic drinks. Now let's turn to page 23, regular page 23, and see what it says there. At the very top, the first paragraph, and these observations would be academic and pointless if a friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. So, the obsession of the mind is the main problem. So the main problem is before the first drink. The secondary problem is after the first drink. Now, believe it or not, folks, I have recovered from that mental obsession. However, I do not believe I will ever recover from the physical allergy. If I take a drink, which I haven't ever done since my first AA meeting, I believe I will develop a phenomenon of craving, like so many people we see do. I believe that with all my heart. But it's a moot point. It just doesn't matter. I haven't wanted a drink. I can see the truth in the matter. Drink is clear, just clear. Just as clear as can be. So you can see why the main problem is in the mind before the first drink. The main kind of powerlessness is before the first drink, and it's called an obsession of the mind. Well, the secondary problem is the physical allergy, which is really a moot point so long as I don't take the first drink, but the phenomenon of craving will develop. I'm sure of that. And there again, when we talk about recovery, this is what we get recovered from, is from the mental obsession, not the physical allergy after the first drink. So it makes it a moot point. And so that's the two things that Dr. Silkworth and the rest of the book here up to this point has sort of described for us. It has described the problem. Bill brings us to understand, however, that all drinkers do not have this main problem, this obsession of the mind. And they can use self-will and self-knowledge, and they can quit drinking. Let's turn to page 20, the down toward the bottom. It says, moderate drinkers have little trouble giving up liquor entirely if they have a good reason for it. They can take it or leave it alone. In other words, they can use self-will and self-knowledge. And then he says, then we have a certain type of hard drinker. He may have a habit badly enough to gradually impair him physically and mentally. It may cause him to die a few years before his time. If a sufficiently strong reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment, or the warning of a doctor becomes operative, this man can also stop or moderate, though he may find it difficult and troublesome and may even need medical attention. So this bird here, he can use self-will and self-knowledge. But Bill says, what about the real alcoholic? You can write this in your book if you like. On page 21, it says real alcoholic, maybe for the first time. But then he says it again on page 30 and 31 and 34 and 35 and 92 and 109. So he wants us to know that the real alcoholic is somebody who cannot use self-will and self-knowledge over the long haul. He'll always get drunk again. And so Bill's going to tell us a few stories about that. He's already told us a little bit about that already in some stories. And let's see what he has to say. He's going to tell us several different times now in these stories how that self-will and self-knowledge will not work for a real alcoholic. Funny, somebody says, Bill tells you what he's going to tell you, and then he tells you, and then he tells you what he told you, and this is what he's going to do here. Let's turn back to page 5 in Bill's story here, and we get to this point, and he says, I woke up, this had to be stopped, so I could not take as much as one drink. Self-knowledge. I was through forever. Before that, I'd written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did.
Self-will? Let's see whether it works. What's the next sentence say? Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. Okay, let's turn to page 35. And we find out about Jim. Let's see whether Jim can use self-will and self-knowledge. And it says a lot of wonderful things about Jim. We don't have time to go on into here. It says he's a real alcoholic. At the bottom of page 35, we see that. And we see he tries self-will and self-knowledge. And all at once we find this guy pouring whiskey in his milk, and it didn't work. And so that's one place we see that self-will and self-knowledge didn't work again. And then at the bottom of page 37, another example, the wonderful Jaywalker story. And there we find that self-will and self-knowledge didn't work for this bird. And we also find there's a guy, Fred, over here on page 39. And it tells a nice story about how Fred tried to use self-will and self-knowledge, and it didn't work for him either. And at the top paragraph on page 40, the last sentence of that first paragraph talks about self-knowledge. And down toward the bottom of the page, toward the last paragraph, you'll find he talks about willpower. Didn't work for him either. So that's some of the places where you can find a book where self-will and self-knowledge don't work in these particular stories. So in this, we get a view, and that's about all we'll be saying about the problem of powerlessness at this point. If the problem was powerlessness, then the solution seems to be power. That's pretty simple. And the power seems to come from two places, from two sources. One source of the power is the fellowship, and the other source of power seems to be from a higher power than fellowship. Let's turn to page 25. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others. There's the first part. There's the fellowship part, see? It really worked in others. And so that's one part. And we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we've been living it. When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, fellowship again, see? There was nothing left for us to do but to pick up a simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We found much of heaven been rocketed into a fourth dimension existence of which we've not even dreamed. So you can see there, the fellowship serves to help. Fellowship supports. The fellowship shows the direction. But yet, the fellowship does not seem to be enough. Let's turn to page 17. And it talks about the people on the liner, and we can read through all that. And down at the bottom of the second paragraph, it says, the feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us, but that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. So it says the fellowship is not enough. We're going to have something else. The tremendous fact for us is that we have discovered a common solution, which is not fellowship, of course. And somebody said that surviving on the fellowship is untreated alcoholism. Survival on the fellowship is untreated alcoholism. I like that. I put that in my book. But at least we have a common solution, which is other than fellowship. And it goes at the top of page 26. We find Carl Jung, who found out what the solution was a long time ago, talking to Roland. And Roland's important now because he's the one that brought the message to Ebbie, who, as you know, brought the message to Bell. But we're going to find out here about this vital spiritual experience. The fellowship serves on one hand. There's some power there. But the main power seems to be from the vital spiritual experience. And here's a doctor talking about what it means to have a vital spiritual experience. And he's talking to Roland here at the top of page 27. And he says, the doctor said, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I've never seen one single case recover where that state of mind existed to the extent it does in you. Our friend felt as though the gates of hell had closed on him with a clang. He said to the doctor, is there no exception? Yes, replied the doctor, yes, there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements, ideas, emotions, and attitudes which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. And here we find out on page 27,
what a vital spiritual experience is. Later on, we had they wrote the book a little bit, put an appendix in the back of the book to let us know there is such a thing as an awakening, too. And let's turn to page 569. And at the very top of that, it talks about the term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, and if one careful reading shows that personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many forms. It lets us know in this particular page that a vital spiritual experience, which is fast, or a spiritual awakening, which is slow, both have the very same result. The one we came here for was to have a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. It says also down at the bottom of page 569, it says that William James calls the educational variety because they develop slowly over a period of time. Now, that's the awakening. So this is where you find in the big book where it tells you about the spiritual awakening. And how long does it take? It even tells you how long the spiritual awakening takes. It says, what often takes place in a few months could seldom be accomplished in years of self-discipline. So even with the educational variety of a spiritual awakening, it's just a few months. And these immediate recovery they talk about begins to happen. That's pretty good. So that's the two kinds of spiritual experiences. One's fast and one's slow. And so there we have an insight into the solution. The solution is power from the fellowship which guides the way, which shows that it works, and guides us into attempting to have a vital spiritual experience / awakening, which either of which will cause us to have a personality change, which will be sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. And after all, that's why we came here, to begin with. But what if we really don't have a hard time believing in all this business? There's a wonderful statement here on page 47, down toward the middle of the page. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, there's a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say he does believe, or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him he's on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. So, in other words, if just being willing to believe, it tells us, is enough just to be on our way here. Page 47, that's a very, very important thing to tell, especially to some newcomer who has a hard time coming to believe in this business. But I felt that problem down deep inside me, and I was willing to believe anything they said, I'll tell you, because I sure didn't want to drink anymore. Another reference that to being willing to believe is over back up one more page on page 46. In the middle of the second paragraph, it says, we found as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, see? Even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. So there's a lot of hope in these two pages. I really am glad this is in the book because it points the way that we can all have this vital spiritual experience. Somebody walked up to the wonderful Chuck Chamberlain some years ago and asked Chuck, do you know why God is so hard to find? And Chuck said, well, I don't know. Why is God so hard to find? He said, because he ain't lost. And I think that's so important when we look at page 55. Now, on page 55, it says some wonderful things. It tells us where God is. It says, we finally saw that faith that some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as a feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. It was as much fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, only there that he may be found. So, and also on the last page here, on page 57, it kind of shows how the fellowship works in conjunction to allow us to have the willingness to believe in this vital spiritual experience can happen to us. The next to last paragraph says, even so, God has restored us to our right minds. To this man, the revelation was sudden. Some of us grow into it more slowly, but he has come to all who have honestly sought him.
When we drew near him, he disclosed himself to us. So the problem was powerlessness, insane, couldn't see the truth in a matter of drink. The solution is sanity, sane, and can see the truth in the matter of drink. The problem is we had a mental obsession, and the solution is the mental obsession has been removed. Now, these two things we need to believe in. All we're required to do, we do not have to work step one and step two. We do not have to work the problem and the solution, but we do need to become convinced of this.
If I'm not convinced of step one, I can't. Step two, that God can, then I'm not really ready to do step three. No. But Bill said in his final draft, like, if you're not convinced of these vital points up to this, you ought to reread the book up to this point, or else just throw it away. So it's very essential that we're convinced of steps one and two before proceeding in with step three, I believe. But you will see on page 60, it says we're at step three. On page 63, you want to jump ahead just a minute, that by the third step prayer there, it says we are now at step three. Well, both those are the same timetable, because all they are only separated by a little bit of commentary on step three. Let's go back to page 60 now, and put a TT, if you're marking your big book, next to where it says being convinced we're at step three, because if we're convinced of it, it's time to do it now. It isn't ever going to wait till later. But we're going to read a little bit of information about preparation into step three. It's some commentary on it, I think, which is very, very pertinent. Let's go to page 62. Of course, on this tape, we won't have time to do a lot of reading, but I'd like you to turn the tape off and just read page 62 and maybe even count how many times you see the word self. And you'll come to the conclusion that self is probably our big enemy. It says, one statement I like, it says, above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. And there's a wonderful thought along there. You know, you hear AA is a selfish program for selfish people, but this is a good place to write at the bottom of your book, the real truth, which is AA is a selfless program for selfish people. Because the self is our big enemy. We've got to get rid of it. And what do we mean by self? Well, keep your hand on page 62 and go back to page 27. In the middle of 27, you'll hear what Dr. Carl Jung has to say about what might well be a good definition of self. Said, old ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men, were suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives began to dominate them. Well, that's a real good definition of self. Ideas, everything we think. Emotions, everything we feel. And attitudes have a lot to do with everything we do. So, you know, that's a good way to look at the self. And that's what we got to get rid of, the old self, and get a brand new one. And that's what the book's about, isn't it? Getting a brand new self. And don't forget, write this down if you like. Self cannot rid self of self with self. And that's our dilemma. And you'll see on page 62, it says that we must, or it kills, but it says God makes that possible. Eh? There often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. So that's what step three is going to be about, making a decision to reach out to God for his aid. Now, at the top of page 63, you'll see some wonderful promises. Please read all those. And the last one says, we were reborn. And so, reborn is the greatest promise that you can imagine. And look at that. What's reborn mean? Does it mean we'll get struck by lightning and change your whole attitude overnight? But not necessarily. I think what it means is we're going to get a new set of old ideas, emotions, and attitudes, like we found out back on page 27. That's what happens, and this power can do that for us. It's a wonderful thing to look forward to. I know I look forward to it. I said the third step prayer every day for the first 6 months and almost got drunk because I wasn't doing the steps. I wasn't carrying the whole thing out. We'll get to that in a minute. But let's go through that prayer a little bit and see what it means to us. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Well, what is the bondage of self? Mark that. That's our old ideas, emotions, and attitudes. See? Once again, that's getting rid of self. Get rid of self. And allow God to give us a brand new self. That's what AA seems to be about. Not just quitting drinking, but getting a brand new self. And that new self can see and act on the truth each and every time, just as clear. And that's a wonderful the program if we can do that. Our old self will see a lie. It'll look up the glamorous times of drinking or say it won't happen this time. It'll say it ain't nobody's business but mine, all that crazy stuff. Well, you know very well that you get drunk if you don't get a new self. So this isn't like keeping your old self and fixing it and fine-tuning it yourself. This is allowing God to throw the old self away and get your whole brand new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. Now, if you look at the top of page 29, you'll see where talk speaks once again about clear-cut directions. And there are some clear-cut directions right here on page 63 as we do step 3. The first clear-cut direction is about two-thirds way down in your book. You can look this up. It said, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready. Well, that's the first direction. There are a few more words to it. That's basically it. First, we put a 1 next to the word before. And then the next paragraph, it says, we found it very desirable to take a spiritual step with an understanding person. Well, there's a second direction, kind of like a direction. And then a little bit further down that same paragraph, it says, the wording was, of course, quite optional, as long as we express the idea. So put a 3 next to the word the, or right in that area somewhere. So you can see there are three directions that need to be performed to do step 3. And yet that's not all. There's more to it than that. It says the wording was, of course, quite optional, so long as we express the idea, voicing without reservation. This is only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. Well, I'll tell you something. I had that great effect. 6 months after I got sober, I had that great effect. I'd said the third step prayer for 180 days in a row, probably, but only when I did it with my sponsor the right way and carried it out, I began to get this great effect, and I got to keep it. I still have it now 25 years later, and that's pretty good as far as I'm concerned. Now, but down to the bottom of page 63, it says, next we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning. Now, down to the bottom of page 63, right, step 3 is carried out by doing steps 4 through 9. And you'll see the truth in that in a minute. On over on page 64, it says, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision at step 3 was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless when at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Well, when did we do step 4? When did we do step 3? At once. Put a TT. Mark at once and put a TT there for timetable. That tells you exactly when. There's no arguing about that. And why do we do step 4? To face and be rid of. But so step 4 is not something just to dredge up a bunch of awful things about ourselves. It's to learn what's been blocking us off from God and learn to face and be rid of. Well, this is something really to look forward to, not to be dreaded, as you hear many people say. I really look forward to it because I believe that this would happen, and it did. Most of those obstacles between myself and God disappeared, at least enough that I didn't have to drink again. Let's jump down to the middle of page 64. It says, we did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. Mark that. Question. How can a hopeless, helpless, lying alcoholic who just got drunk a week or a month ago, the mind lies to him all the time, use that same mind to write an inventory? Well, the point is, I didn't, and I think a lot of people don't. I think they use God. This is exactly what happened to me. My sponsor, Carl, as soon as we did step three, got me 4 pieces of paper and set them down so I could start writing at once. And atop of one, it said resentment. Right, God help me, I'm doing my inventory. Fear on another paper, God help me, I'm doing my inventory. Next one, guilt, God help me, I'm doing my inventory. And the other, that strong force that we all have, sex, God help me, I'm doing my inventory. And he said, I don't want you to write any sentences. I don't want any capital letters, no periods. I don't want to even write. I want you to scribble what God tells you to put in those papers. Go home right now and start writing, and do not go to your mind. What, your mind doesn't work, Bob. He said, you're crazy as a pet coon. He said, your mind lies to you all the time. And use God, let God write, do all the writing. And it turned out that indeed God did. And within 5 or 10 minutes, I had more truth scribbled on those 4 pieces of paper, jumped from one to the other all over the place, than I would have had in 6 months using my good, keen, intellectual, alcoholic mind. So that's a good way. And don't think that's something new. I heard a guy at the Minneapolis convention this summer claimed that he, in 1947, he went to the first Big Book Step study meeting known in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they talked about spontaneous writing then. Naturally, you wouldn't have to do it the way I put down here, the way we did out there in California. But some kind of spontaneous writing, I think, is really important. As soon as you get this great effect from God and allow that great effect to put that on paper, this is how you can put the honesty on the paper. Now, to talk about step 4 takes a long time. Matter of fact, it takes so long that we have made another tape called Precise Directions on step 4. That's a 60-minute tape. And so, obviously, we couldn't put that on here. So, we're not going to talk a lot about steps 4, except some of the basic things about step 4. There'll be no directions for step 4 on this tape. But one thing it says, why do we do it? To face and be rid of the things which had been blocking us. So we got a reason of why we're doing it. And how do we find out what those things are? Well, that's what the directions are about. As we go through this and go through however we do it, we'll find out there's directions to face and be rid of resentment. There's directions how to face and be rid of fear. And there's directions how to face and be rid of our dishonesty and to see our selfishness, how we've been selfish toward people in all these pages. And let's go to page 70. And one thing you're going to find out, and a lot of people don't know, is when do you do step 8? Well, it kind of gives you a good hint right here. Let's go about 4 lines up from the bottom of page 70. We list the people we've hurt by our conduct, are willing to straighten out the past if we can. Well, that's a good place to start step 8. You start some writing right there. It might not be all step 8, but right there, the information's right there in front of you. A lot of it. Especially if you use that spontaneous writing we told you about. And we're going to find out some things. And one thing we find out, let's go to page 71. Down a few lines, you'll see the word grosser handicaps. It says, if you've made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you've made a good beginning. Okay. Well, what are those grosser handicaps? It kind of jumps out at you in step 4. What have we been talking about? Well, we've been talking about resentment, dishonesty, selfishness, and fear. And this is what's been blocking us off from God. So step 4 kind of shows in a written way, however you've got it written down, the things that you're going to be talking about in step 5. Because this is your life story. When we get to step 5, your sponsor doesn't care as your life story what kind of shoes you wore to graduation, or the year your parents were born, or your heritage. Your sponsor wants to know, where have you been selfish? Where have you been dishonest? Where have you been resentful? What are the fears that are driving you crazy these days? That's exactly what should be on that paper that you've just finished writing on step four in a rather organized way. And it's time to talk about it in depth. So we write our grosser handicaps in step four. We tell our life story in step five. And you hear it the other way around at times. So now here on step five, there's some real good ideas and directions here. In the bottom of the first paragraph, it mentions the exact nature of our defects. Mark that exact nature. The exact nature, that sets us free. It sets us free from having to think, well, I got to tell exactly where I did this terrible deed at, the person's names involved in it. No, you just say that the general way what it was. Maybe, let's say, something real dramatic. Maybe you robbed a bank. I don't know, maybe you did, but you don't have to tell where the bank was or even what state it was. Because then certainly you don't want to tell who was with you when you did it. Just the fact that, well, you robbed a big establishment or something. You're a thief. You're a robber. Well, that's your character defect. So you got, and you're dishonest. So you got basically what it is, and that's enough to get across right away. Confession's good for the soul. And when you get to step nine, there'll be some other thoughts along that line about making amends. But right here, I'm sure your sponsor doesn't want to hear all the details about where that he may be drawn into court and has to tell the terrible things you've done in your life. So that sets you free. Just the exact nature of your defects, not precise, exactly date, time, and all that stuff. So that's some good news. And down toward the bottom of page 72, why do we want to do step five? It says, the best reason first, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Mark that. And be sure, I hope you're reading the book along this. I hope you're turning this tape off and reading in between, because this is just so scant. You're not gonna get, if you just listen to the tape, I don't know what you're going to get out of it. You'll get some ideas, but this is meant to be a study tape now. You're supposed to be reading page 72, and now by this time you might have read all 72, and you read down to page the top of 73. If you haven't, turn it off. Then when you get to the bottom of the top paragraph on 73, mark all their life story. When do you do step five? Well, four lines up from the bottom of page 74. It's mark first opportunity and put a timetable there. Where are the fifth step promises? Well, it's page 75. The second full paragraph starts, we pocket our pride and go to it. And there's some wonderful promises there. One of them I like a lot, the feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come on strongly. So all the steps have wonderful promises about them, every one. You'll have to search about yourself, because I can't tell you on this tape, but take my word, every step has promises concerning it. But here we're going to find more timetable. After we do the fifth step with our sponsor, it says we, returning home, we find a place where we'd be quiet for an hour, mark an hour, and that's another timetable. I've always thought that hour was allegorical. I don't know, you have to be that exact precise about it. But we review what we've done up to this point, and if you read that bottom paragraph, you'll see how it tells you to go over and review the first five steps. And we do that, and then here it is, we're ready for step six. You know, step five, six, and seven, we always thought of those as the same day steps. They're all just done right together. They run together. See, we do step five, we wait an hour, and the top of page 76 I will read, if we can answer to our satisfaction, we then, not later, then look at step six. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. So, and it goes on to give us some directions about step six. And then when do we do step seven? Well, it says when ready. And then we do this wonderful prayer. And I like to notice the changing of motivation that we're changing ourselves. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which sends away my useless you and my fellows. You catch that? You see the motive? Not so I don't get drunk and have to die. It says, which stands in the useless, in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. We're beginning to think of God and everybody else. Grant me strength so that I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Now we see an amen. We've now completed step seven. And you see that was amen there. We didn't see it in step three, did we? Step four, all those prayers, no amen. Five, no amen. Six, no amen. And here in seven, we've completed something. It is like we've completed a whole inner work on our inner dimensions of ourselves. These are all a mental dimension. You might look at that. Step three and four and five and six and seven are all internal things. Things where our character defects are, we're discovering. And we want to learn, we're going to have God to get rid of them. We're asking God to get rid of these things. So yeah, that is all like a mental dimension. You can look at it that way if you want to. And then we've completed step seven. I think we begin to change. It's like as though a man was in a room and all the walls were mirrors. There might be six or seven walls in that room. And they're all mirrors. But as we do the steps, the mirrors begin to change. And instead of seeing ourselves, because these mirrors have changed into windows, and we begin to see the world and realize there's other people out there and we can do things for the world, and we begin to get free of the bondage of self that we talked about back in the third step, and now we've completed that, amen, and we're beginning to see the world and we're freeing ourselves, progress, not perfection, but from that bondage of self, the old ideas, emotions, and attitudes that we had are changing. And we're beginning to care and for the world. And that's one thing that'll keep us sober, by caring for others. Because what good if we are drunk? We ain't no good for nothing. Who wants an old drunk around? Nobody wants an old drunk. Yeah, another drunk don't want you around unless you got some money left. So this is a wonderful set of things to do. 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. So you see the timetables. I think I forgot to tell you step six then. Put a TT there on that top line. The first line of step seven, the second paragraph on page 76. Put a TT there. And so that's 4, 5, 6, and 7. A wonderful set of things to go through, and it don't take very long. Remember, we did step one out there getting drunk. We did step two. By coming to AA meetings, just looking around, we see, gosh, it's working for all these people. That's evidential enough for us in step two. And step three, we made a decision, and that prayer don't take too long to do. And step four was at once. And five was first opportunity. And we waited 1 hour, and then, not later, then we did six. And step seven was when ready. You see, it just flows right into it. You get a chance sometime, go to 292, and you'll see how Dr. Bob did the steps with people in just a few hours, the step process, the six-step process as it was at that time. So it doesn't take a long time to do these, whatever you hear. That's probably, we're just going by what the book says, not what you hear. And now maybe we're ready to do step eight. We're still on page 76, third full paragraph. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of persons we had harmed and to whom we're willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. See? Put a TT there for step 8. That's your timetable. Write page 70 there. So, and that's a cross-reference. See, you can go back and say, well, that's where it said, the bottom of page 70, four lines up the bottom. It's telling us there, and here it's telling us it again. So the steps aren't exactly in order because you do 8 when you did 4. Of course, naturally, you can add on to it and so on, of course. But, I mean, that's where you started way back there. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. And the next word is a beautiful word. It is now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. Naturally, that's step 9. Put a TT there, and that's now. So, you see, the book doesn't have you just fooling around the steps and taking your time. Somebody says you got time on your side. I don't believe it. You got time against you. If you start separating these steps too far from one another, you're back into self-will again. And then the thing is, we want to keep this great effect we got in step 3, and we will keep it right on through all the rest of our lives, not let it get away. And that means working this step and living this program all day long, 24 hours a day, even when you're asleep. Your mind's working with God because you've altered your mind by the way you've lived. You're becoming a new person with a new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. Step 9 has a lot of different, a lot of reading and a lot of different really great ideas. But why do we want to do all this stuff anyway? Page 77, 3 lines down from the top. We seldom have you mark an entire sentence, but this time we do. This is so important. It says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. See? So we want to be maximum, not kind of, not sort of. We want to be maximum. Because that's what God's will is, to get away from old self-will and get into God's will. And God has been of a maximum service to us, or we wouldn't be here come these AA rooms, see? We'd be out there laying in the gutter. That's what we asked for. And God's had mercy on us. He's maximum to us. Now, it's our turn to be maximum to others. So, page 77, second full paragraph we don't use is begins general means, right? General out to the side. On page 78, the second full paragraph, most alcoholics owe money, write financial in the column there. On the bottom paragraph of page 78, write criminal, because it's going to talk about criminal amends. And go to page 80, and the bottom paragraph on page 80 talks about domestic amends. So a lot of instructions, far too much to go into here. But on page 83, there's something that I always like to point out. The third full paragraph. There could be some wrongs we can never fully right. Mark, never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. And that I think that's a very oft-asked questions. And then we have the 9-step promises, and I have it written in my book, these are the insufficient promises, because a lot of people start getting those promises, and they think, boy, I got her made now, I can feel it all around me, and so it's time to get some balance in my life and stop going to these AA meetings so much, and the next time you hear they're drunk again, too. Because these are insufficient to recover. But to be a fully recovered alcoholic, we have to live in the spirit of 10, 11, and 12. And so we're at step 10 on page 84. And says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we take personal inventory and continue writing new mistakes as we go along. Well, new mistakes is our thinking, see? Not just what we do outside of ourselves. It's our thinking we do inside. We very convinced of this way of living as we clean up the past. That means that we don't have to finish step 9 before we get to step 10. We've entered the world of the Spirit. That means God's going to help us. Our next function is grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. There's your first clear-cut direction. That's what you do all day long, see? Not just before you go to bed at night or in the morning, all day long. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. That's a second direction. We discuss it with someone immediately. That's a third direction. And make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. There's a fourth direction. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. That's a fifth direction. So you see there are five directions here in step 10. Not, if you read it off the board there to the clubhouse, it looks like there's two directions, but there's five. See? And where did they come from? Well, it says continue to watch for self-dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Well, we learned to do that in step 4, did we not? When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We learned that in steps 6 and 7. We discussed it with someone immediately. We discussed that, and we learned how to do that in step 5 and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. That's 8 and 9, obviously. So we learned how to do that. Our on-the-job training for step 10 was doing 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. That's how we learned how to do 10. If we didn't do 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, the Alcoholics Anonymous way, we couldn't do the Alcoholics Anonymous step 10. You see that? Sure. And I don't know if you ever heard this or not. I used to hear it. Do step 10 before you go to bed at night. What a dumb idea. But that's what... See, let's read this again. When these crop up, we ask God when at once to remove them. We discuss it with someone immediately and make amends quickly. That doesn't sound at all like anything we do before we go to bed at night. So there's just a few little things to point out. We have another tape on 10, 11, and 12 where we spend probably 30 full minutes on step 10 or maybe 40 minutes. So, this is just a brief way to look at it. But it should be very helpful to you if you've not been acquainted with it before. Now, what is it like to be a recovered alcoholic, see? And I'm going to read you what I call the recovered promises. You can write that at the bottom of page 84 if you like. It's what it's like to be recovered. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil as from a hot flame. We act sanely and normally. We find this has happened automatically. We will see that a new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. Isn't that a miracle? That's why I came to AA, to have the problem. You know very well, we're not taught the physical analogy. We're taught that the mental obsession has been removed. And you notice it didn't say it had been destroyed, eradicated, beamed to outer space. It said it just simply been removed from the middle of my head, or maybe your head, about 3 inches away and sitting up there trying to get in. But God, if you're lucky like I've been, put a great big fishbowl around your head and made a metaphysical truth. And a lie cannot penetrate the truth. Okay? And you're free, and it doesn't exist for you because it's 3 inches away out there trying to get in. And it can't get in unless, see, it says, we are neither cocky nor are we afraid. This is our experience. This is how we react so long as we keep in a fit spiritual condition. So if you stay in that fit spiritual condition, that goldfish bowl is going to stay permanent. It's going to be truthful, and that lie can't get through, right? And that's a wonderful thing. So right off the side of your book, the state of recovered is conditional. There are three things you can be as an alcoholic. You can be an unrecovered alcoholic, and that means you have a lie in your head, and you don't know it's in there, don't care anyway. And it generally says a drink, and you generally drink. You can be a recovering alcoholic. Means that you have a lie in your head, and you know it's in there, and you're battling against it just one day at a time, hanging in there. And misery, and fear, and turmoil. And that might last for a while, a year or so. But it don't have to be that way that long. Because the big book says you could become a recovered alcoholic, which means that God has come in, got that drunken monkey out of your head by the tail, ripped him out of there, and before he gets back in, he puts that big fishbowl around your head. It can't get past that because it's the truth. It can't get through affirming of the truth which God has given you, and that's what recovered means. And everything we read about in 60, 84 and 85 here so far will be true for you. And this is one of the main things I want to get across to you, that this thing can happen to everybody who really tries this program. Not one person out of 30 or one out of 50 or one out of two. I think 100%. If you work this program in your life, you'll have a 100% chance not to take one drink for one day and eventually get this wonderful experience called recovered. And notice it says on page 85, further down, you'll get to this, and Mark that, said, we are not cured of alcoholism. Absolutely not. That drunken monkey's going to be out there all the rest of your life. And also, that physical allergy is going to be waiting to get you to both of them. So you're not, and because you're recovered, doesn't mean you won't be drunk next month. It just means if you stay in a fit spiritual condition, you won't be. That's all. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Isn't that wonderful? A daily reprieve. That's a lot better than one day at a time, ain't it? I mean, a daily reprieve. There's great joy and happiness in a daily reprieve. Not just that old hanging in there stuff, you know. Well, it's, I mean, it's good to hang in till you get it. But work these steps as soon as you can, and then you're going to get it. I did, you know, and you can too if I can. Okay, that's step 10. Now we get step 11. Page 86, first full paragraph, says, when we retire at night, mark that, we construct a review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Well, where have we heard that before? We heard that, step 4, we heard that in step 10, and now we're hearing it in step 11. One wonders where that rumor that you do step 10 before you go to bed at night might have come from people who just read the book and didn't study it. And when they read what we just read here, they thought they were reading about step 10, but that's step 11. Well, that's really good. And it has some great meditation to do. This is meditation down to the bottom. And it says, after making a review, we ask God's forgiveness, inquire what corrective measures should be taken. You notice we ask God to forgive us. We don't just forgive ourselves. I used to do that when I was drunk. I could get drunk again, and I forgive you, Bob. You got a right to do it, you know, whatever it was. See? But we ask God's forgiveness, and God has given me and probably you too what is called emotional forgetfulness. I don't walk around with that hole in my stomach anymore, the bad things I did. I remember them very specifically and tell people about them if it help be helpful to them, but I don't suffer from it, and I don't have morbid reflection. And it tells us what to do on awakening, the second paragraph, and write morning out to the side of that. And wonderful stuff at the bottom of page, near the bottom of page 87, I want you to read this. Suggestion about these days, about these may come from, be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. So Bill presses that very, very strongly, to see where religious people are right. And the bottom paragraph on page 87, write day and read that. You'll see what you should do throughout the day. There's lots of wonderful information. It must be studied between pages 89 and 103 in step 12. But just remember what it tells you about on page 101 to go to whoopee parties and bars and things such as that. That's for somebody who's recovered, and probably not for you if you're in early sobriety. Well, we found out that Carl Jung knew what the solution for alcoholism was, a vital spiritual experience, but he didn't know what the problem was. And amazingly, the other group, the Oxford group, knew how to find a vital spiritual experience, but they didn't also know what the problem was. And we find out that the one that didn't know the problem, Dr. Silkworth, knew the problem exactly, but he didn't know how to have a vital spiritual experience, and then even that was really the solution at the beginning. So you got these three things come together when Bill wrote the big book, and you have it right in your hand right now. You know what is the problem, what is the solution, and how to find the solution. And that's everything you need to know to become a recovered alcoholic and to remain a recovered alcoholic.